What do they have in common? Psycho, North by Northwest, Vertigo, Citizen Kane, The Day the Earth Stood Still, Taxi Driver, The Seventh Voyage of Sinbad. For that matter, The Twilight Zone and Have Gun Will Travel. Well, all of them were more vivid thanks to the music of Bernard Herrmann. I'm Norman Gilliland. This is University of the Air. We're going to follow the career of Bernard Herrmann through several movies, and taking us through them will be Raymond Benson, the author of more than 30 books, including several James Bond books, and most recently the Black Stiletto series. He's also a teacher of film history at College of DuPage, and welcome back to University of the Air.
Well, thank you. It's great to be back, Norman.
I guess there are few film music composers we could follow who would have more to their credit than Bernard Herrmann.
Oh, well, Bernard Herrmann did so much other stuff besides film, and he would only take a film task if he was guaranteed final cut of his music. In other words, he would not allow it to be edited.
That's asking a lot, isn't it?
Yeah, it is asking a lot. And also he wanted to make sure the director would let him do what he wanted to do. And if that wasn't in the contract at the beginning, he wouldn't do it.
Did he start out as a classically trained composer?
Yes. He was born in New York City in 1911, and he went to New York University and Juilliard. And so, he was well equipped as a composer and conductor.
That's right. He studied with Percy Grainger.
Yes, he did. And right off the bat, after he left Juilliard, he got a pretty fantastic job at CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting System, there in New York as a staff conductor at the age of 23. And he did that. He would be the musical director of what they called the Columbia Workshop, which was dramatic shows on the radio, and he would do all the music. He would also conduct orchestras and play classical music in radio shows. But in less than 9 years, in about 9 years, he became the chief conductor of the CBS Symphony Orchestra.
Well, let's see. So he was born in 1911. And so that means by the time, say, the War of the Worlds came along, which he provided the music, he was all of 27 to Orson Welles's 23.
Yeah, something like that. Yeah. He introduced lots of classical works on the radio. He was very big on Charles Ives. He brought Charles Ives pretty much for the first time to a wide audience, via the radio. He conducted many programs of classical music and introduced a lot of new works. So he was very busy all that time during the CBS, and he met Orson Welles at that time, because Orson Welles was doing radio shows, including the Campbell Playhouse and Mercury Theater on the Air, that kind of thing. And that's how they got to know each other. And their first really big, I guess, well-known collaboration was, as you say, the War of the Worlds broadcast, and that was 1938, which caused a lot of people to jump out of buildings and stuff, because they all thought it was real. But then Welles got a contract with RKO to make a couple of movies, and so he tapped Bernard Herrmann to do the score. And, of course, Citizen Kane came out in 1941, and that was Bernard Herrmann's first score.
Well, it's kind of fascinating to me to think that between 38 and 41, 38 you have what's possibly, the greatest radio play ever produced. And at 41, you have what on many lists is the greatest film ever produced, both with Orson Welles and Bernard Herrmann.
I know.
Bad for still being in your 20s.
That's right. And, the music of Citizen Kane was pretty unique at the time. And it's very mysterious in places, and then it's very lively in places. He was nominated for an Oscar for the score of Citizen Kane, but he was also competing with himself for another movie the same year that got nominated for a score, and that was The Devil and Daniel Webster. That title was used in England, but over in America they changed it to All That Money Can Buy. But he won the Oscar for that. And not Citizen Kane.
Well, that'd be a tall order to to win the same Oscar for two films in the same year.
Right. And then he was never nominated again until the last year of his life.
Well, again, it was one of those cases of starting young and whatever happens after that. Although, unlike Orson Welles, whose career you could say kind of sputtered a lot in his post-20s,
right.
Bernard Herrmann was at it for a long time.
He did.
Very solid work.
Yeah.
Well, what about this music then for Citizen Kane that you've mentioned?
Well, the piece I brought with me today is one of the more lively pieces. It's probably the piece that's more recognized as sort of the theme of Citizen Kane, although it really appears kind of, you know, 30 minutes into the movie. It's called The Gallop. So it does evoke horses. It's more when he was young. It was during the scene when he's a young man and there's the sled and the snow and
sure.
his parents.
Rosebud.
Yes, yes. Oh, yes. Oh, don't give it away. for those out there who's never seen the movie, you know. So
scratch that from the record.
Right.
And so we're hearing this during the sledding scene.
Yes. Uh-huh.
That's very much like just a piece of classical music.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I mean, he drew from all kinds of influences, but that was pretty accessible kind of stuff, you know. I believe, if I'm not mistaken, that was also played over the end credits.
Oh, really?
I think so.
After that somber finale.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
To kind of flash back to the golden boyhood years.
Now, he did work with Orson Welles one more time, and that was The Magnificent Ambersons, which was...
A notorious film.
Yes. It's a really good movie.
It is. It's just all chopped up.
I know. I just wish I could see the original that Orson Welles planned. But basically, Herrmann had his name taken off the credits because it got chopped up. And he thought his music was butchered by what the studio did to it, and he threatened legal action if they didn't take his name off. So there's no music credit in that movie.
Do you wonder if there's ever a complete original print out there, pre-edited?
No, everybody's wondered about that. Uh-huh. They destroyed the 30 minutes they cut out of it, so you'll never get to see it restored.
You know, there's such a big... complicated art, it seems to me, to writing for a film because, you don't want to do what's called Mickey Mousing, where you're actually, you know, imitating the action on the screen, blow by blow. On the other hand, you want to create the right mood for it, too, for that scene.
Well, there's one school of thought that is if you notice the music, then it's not good.
Well, sure.
But, I don't agree with that.
I can see it to some extent.
You know, I don't agree with that. I love film music, and a lot of the movies I love is because of the score, you know. I mean, take Ennio Morricone, for example. Can you imagine, you know, The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly without that theme?
Yeah, that's true. It's very much associated with it.
Or the Bond music. I mean,
true.
You know, and later on when you hear some of the Hitchcock, Bernard Herrmann stuff, that's very memorable. I mean, you do notice the music in the shower scene, like
we'll
what we played at the beginning of the show.
We'll get back to the shower a little later to prove the point. If we go just a little bit past it, see, the Ambersons was 1942, was it?
Yeah.
So if we go into the post-war years, of course, there's this absolute craze with science fiction, and Bernard Herrmann
That kind of started more in the 1950-51.
Right.
And
which was the year for The Day of the Earth Stood Still.
Yeah, 51, Day of the Earth Stood Still. And, you know, Herrmann didn't care, you know, if the movie he was working on was an A picture or a B picture or a C picture.
You can't, can you?
You know, as long as he got what he wanted and was paid what he wanted, he didn't care. And he did a lot of fantasy movies, a lot of science fiction.
Did he?
Yes. You know, he did a lot of the scores for the early Ray Harryhausen, you know, I forget what they call it. But, Seventh Voyage of Sinbad, which we'll play a little bit, and Jason and the Argonauts and things like that. He did the scores for all of those. And, Day of the Earth Stood Still is one of his iconic scores because he used a theremin in it.
which was a relatively new instrument. It had been used already, I think, for what, Lost Weekend, I think.
Spellbound.
Spellbound.
Yeah.
Yeah, to kind of create the sense of some kind of altered mental state.
Right, right. Yeah. But here, you know, he really used it in the – I mean, the score – when you listen to the score of Day the Earth Stood Still, it just evokes the term science fiction, you know. If I had to play a piece of music that says, okay, this is science fiction, folks, I'd play this, you know.
And here's the beginning of that.
You're right.
Which is very, I would say, not reminiscent because it comes before, but reminiscent in a backward way of the music he would write for the CBS Radio Workshop for something like Brave New World 5 years later.
Oh, sure. Yeah, yeah.
Is the theremin the only sort of non-conventional instrument in that?
Well, what's doing all those sort of chimey things?
Yeah, is it some kind of glockenspiel?
I guess. I really don't know. This is the London Symphony Orchestra that he's actually conducting on this, on most of the tracks I have here. And some of them are the London Philharmonic conducted by Salonen. But most of these are him conducting. So, yeah, I'd like to know, like, what instrumentation he used for that.
Oh, here's another piece from that same music. And you'll notice that, like in the piece we just heard, it takes, what, 5 seconds before you figure out, oh, this is science fiction.
Yeah.
And there's something very spooky going on here.
Right. Now, this next piece is more evoking tension and suspense. That gives you an idea of
the atmosphere.
Yeah.
Well, you know, I was hearing, Raymond, I was hearing another piece in my head as I was hearing that, and it took me a while to identify it. I realized, oh, it's from the Twilight Zone.
Oh, a little bit, yeah.
Yeah,
well,
which,
you know,
those rhythms.
He did do the score for the Twilight Zone, but he did the theme of the Twilight Zone for the first season only, and that's not the one we know, really. The first season, the theme was very kind of austere, And starting with the second season, that's when we got the theme that goes dee-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee. Right. But that was by a guy named Marius Constant.
Yes.
But Herman did still do some of the background music of Twilight Zone and some other TV shows.
It has that feel. It definitely has that feel.
This next piece from Day the Earth Stood Still brings in the theremin a little more. This is probably around the time when Gort the robot is, you know, doing his thing. And, you know, you have to say, what are the three magic words? Do you know, Norman?
Klata.
Almost.
Narada Nictu.
Yeah. Klatu Barada Nictu.
That's my dialect. Yeah, you know, you didn't recognize it.
Yeah. So hit that one. Very atmospheric stuff.
Very effective.
And creepy, too.
Yes, you're sure that something is going to come that will be a little weird.
Yeah, great score. And then, you know, he continued to do, you know, sort of the B-movie circuit throughout the 50s until he met Hitchcock. And then, but we'll talk about Hitchcock in a minute. I want to hit his fantasy film scores next, which has started with The Seventh Voyage of Sinbad.
And so we're going to get to The Seventh Voyage of Sinbad. Right after this. This is University of the Air. I'm Norman Gilliland, back with Raymond Benson, who is guiding us through the world of movie music by Bernard Herrmann. And so far, well, Citizen Kane, The Day the Earth Stood Still, those are pieces with a certain kind of mental intensity to them. But how does he do, you mentioned these B-movies, Raymond, with something so outdoorsy and I might even say superficial as The Seventh Voyage of Sinbad?
Well, I mean, it's a great film as far as, you know, Ray Harryhausen claymation monsters and cyclops and, you know, it's great stuff for kids as well as adults. And Herman really, you know, he took it as a challenge. Let's make a really good score for what's, you know, it's a B movie, but, you know, my music is A music. So I'm going to do something really spectacular. And his score for Seventh Voyage is spectacular. It's very good. And, of course, it draws in from, you know, sort of that Eastern, Middle Eastern kind of Arabic feel throughout a lot of it.
Let's see how much it sounds like Rimsky-Korsakov.
Yeah.
Thank you.
So it's very majestic, and, you know, you can just see the guy with the big scimitars. And,
yes, I can almost smell the popcorn,
and,
actually.
And the puffy, you know, the puffy trousers, you know, that they that they wore.
Yeah, same kind of thing that Mozart or Beethoven did with that kind of Turkish beat.
Yeah, yeah, you know. Yeah. Now, this next piece from the same movie is more belly dancer, lyrical, brings in, you know, Herman was very good at lush orchestration on a very beautiful melody, and I think this is a good example of that. It's just gorgeous, isn't it?
It was very lush with the strings.
And melancholic, too.
Sure.
I find that, you know, that Arabian kind of sound, like Rimsky-Korsakov, is very melancholic.
Yeah,
for some reason. I wonder why that is.
That mode, something about the mode that he's using, that's there's got a kind of a wistful quality to it.
Yeah, I know. That's interesting. So, you know, he did Journey to the Center of the Earth, and that was from 59, and then he did more 50. Ray Harryhausen, like Mysterious Island and Jason and the Argonauts. But, you know, I guess he's mostly known for his collaboration with Alfred Hitchcock. And that was a very fruitful period for both Hitchcock and Bernard Herrmann. I think Hitchcock made some of his best movies between 1955 and 1964.
Sure.
And Herrmann was the score guy. It started with The Trouble with Harry in 1955, which was a very very whimsical,
rather fun piece. Lighthearted for Hitchcock,
Yeah. That was followed by The Man Who Knew Too Much, which was a remake of his 1934 film. But and interestingly, the song "Que Sera Sera" that Doris Day sings in the film
is not Herman.
It's not Herman, but it won the Oscar for best song that year.
That must have been a little annoying for Bernard Herman.
And the other piece that's very important to that is the Storm Clouds Cantata by Arthur Benjamin, an Australian composer. That was used in the original 1934 piece as part of the plot. So they reused it in the new in the remake, and Bernard Herrmann himself is conducting the orchestra on screen at the finale of the movie in the Royal Albert Hall. So that's his one cameo, you know, in the movies.
Well, now with something like Vertigo, the premise is what, that this man wants to sort of recreate his dead wife.
Yeah, I know. You know, if you really examine what that movie's about, it's pretty sick.
Well, you know, with Hitchcock, you kind of
need some of that. I know. I mean, in many ways, it's about necrophilia.
Right, right, yes.
But Vertigo is my favorite Hitchcock movie, and it's very possible Vertigo is my favorite score by Herrmann, very possibly. But Vertigo is just such a haunting, beautiful movie, and the score is just... It just typifies what that movie's about. It's just very, you know, cerebrally emotional, if that makes sense.
And interestingly, the two pieces we have here have actually sort of classical titles, the first being Prelude.
Uh-huh. Well, that was the main titles over the, you know, over the titles. And then Scène d'amour is really the love theme of the movie. And that has been used in other movies. You know, it's been licensed. Most recently, it was in The Artist, the 2011 Best Picture, the silent film.
Sure.
That was used very prominently. In fact, you know, when I was watching The Artist and I heard that music, I go, why are they using Bernard Herrmann?
Uh-huh.
You know, because I would recognize it. Maybe most general audiences wouldn't. But to me, that's kind of a cheat.
Interesting that it could be used for two so different films,
mm-hmm.
Vertigo and The Artist.
Mm-hmm. Let's hear The Prelude. Oh, that just brings back, it sends chills down my back, you know.
Also sets the tone, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Herrmann
yeah,
is very good yeah. at that with just a few measures
right,
of
right.
setting you up.
Right.
What about this love scene then?
Well, this is, you know, very much, you know, James Stewart falls in love with Kim Novak, in the first half of the film, and she dies, we think. And then he meets another woman who looks just like her, except she's got the wrong color hair. And so he proceeds to completely reshape this woman into the image of the first Kim Novak. And this is music that just really underlines his obsession with this woman.
And it's called Scène d'amour.
Right.
Scène d'amour from the Hitchcock movie Vertigo, and the music by Bernard Herrmann there with a little bit of a Wagnerian turn or two, but it works.
Oh, very dramatic, very dramatic.
Well, we'll look at Psycho and Taxi Driver and North by Northwest right after this. You're listening to University of the Air on the Ideas Network of WPR.
Thank you.
I'm Norman Gilliland, back with Raymond Benson, who is guiding us through the world of the movie music of Bernard Herrmann and his, I think, most famous movie assignment. Well, Citizen Kane certainly would be a contender, but in more recent years, let's say, would be Psycho.
Absolutely. And it's probably, you know, arguably it's Hitchcock's most famous film,
sure,
too.
Sure.
And, you know, what's interesting about the score for Psycho is that he only used the string section. Only. And that gives the score this sort of nervy feeling.
It does.
You know, it just kind of gets on your the back of your spine.
A little edgy, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah, very edgy is right. And it's perfect. It's absolutely perfect for this movie.
At the beginning of the hour, we heard a little bit of the probably most famous little bit of music, you know, the actual murder in the shower, which is similar to what he uses a little later when the detective gets it.
Yeah, Martin Balsam gets it.
And he goes falling backwards down the stairs.
Yeah.
But here we have the prelude. And then the city, is this kind of setting up the crime?
Yeah, it's when Janet Lee has taken the money from her employers, and she's about to hit, you know, leave town.
Bad plan.
Yeah, yeah. and then the next piece, the third piece we're going to play is called The Rains, and that's when she's on the road and it's storming, you know, and we see that great close-up of her behind the wheel and she's looking in the rearview mirror and she's scared and, you know, it's just, you know, the windshield wipers are going back and forth and it's just great stuff.
And it just gets a little more tense from that.
Yeah.
From Psycho.
Psycho.
Yes. Plenty intense. And done just with strings. I noticed that Bernard Herrmann was pretty heavy on the strings in some of the earlier excerpts that we heard, too. That really seems to have been his strong suit. Yeah.
He really likes half steps, too. You know, that
and just kind of gradually ramping it up.
Yeah.
Very, very effective in Psycho. And most effectively, of course, in the scene that we started with, or the music that we started the hour with, the actual murder scene of Janet Leigh and then Martin Balsam later. Right.
So he did Marnie in 64 with Hitchcock, and then he was starting to do Torn Curtain in 66 for Hitchcock, but that was a case where the studio heads had changed and they wanted a more pop kind of score. And Herrmann had already completed about half the score, and they wanted something different, and they told him to change it, and he wouldn't do it. And then he and Hitchcock fought about it, and they had a falling out, and so Herrmann walked. So they had ended up with another score by John Addison, and apparently Herrmann and Hitchcock never spoke again, which is too bad.
Yeah,
you know?
It's tough. Two headstrong artists.
Yeah. But, you know, he still continued to work, and right up until the end, in 1976, he got nominated again against himself. Like in 1941, he was nominated for both Citizen Kane and Devil and Daniel Webster. In 76, he was nominated for Obsession, directed by Brian De Palma, and Taxi Driver, directed by Martin Scorsese. And Taxi Driver was his final score. And there's an apocryphal legend that he finished scoring the last measure of Taxi Driver and then died of a heart attack. Yeah, and that was 1975, December 24th, 1975. But I think the score for Taxi Driver is one of his best, and it's just as iconic as some of the others.
Of course, it helped to make Jodie Foster a star. Thank you.
So you can just sense the tension in this music. You know, I mean, all the way through that movie, that music helps, you know, tell the audience something bad is going to happen, folks.
It's interesting because it's a different kind of ominous sound than you got in Psycho or even Vertigo.
It's more under the table. You know, it's more like it's slow.
Yeah, so it definitely has an urban quality to it, of course.
Yeah, and then it goes into that more lyrical sort of jazzy piece, which is kind of the main theme because, you know, really, I mean, the character of Travis Bickle, deep down, he's probably a good guy. He's just messed up because he's a Vietnam veteran who's kind of messed up. And he's got, you know, the wrong ideas about how to be a hero. But I think that pretty music, you know, kind of emphasizes the good part of him, you know. And it's an incredible movie. If you haven't seen it in a while, you need to revisit it.
Well, now speaking of revisiting, we've gone chronologically so far through this film score career of Bernard Herrmann, but for some reason, Raymond, you wanted to drop back and end with North by Northwest, another Hitchcock film.
That's right. I think the main title, The North by Northwest, which was 1959, I think is the singular best piece of music he ever wrote. It's just uplifting. It's invigorating. It's complex. It just makes you want to go, wow. So, this is my favorite Bernard Herrmann piece.
Is this for the main title?
It's the main title.
Imagine Cary Grant running away from the crop duster and these almost iconic now film scenes with Eva Marie Saint and
Mount
James
Rushmore.
Mason.
Mount Rushmore. Oh. You know, I've never been to Mount Rushmore, but that's one reason why I want to go, because it was in North by Northwest.
Well, it'll conjure all kinds of sounds of the music of Bernard Herrmann when you go, Raymond.
Right.
And thanks for scampering through some of the, just some
yeah.
of the music of Bernard Herrmann.
Yeah, there's tons more. And I'm, if you're interested, I'm sure you can, you know, just search the net and you could probably pick up lots of CDs of his music.
And you get a whole chronology of it. Well, we'll look forward to your next visit to University of the Air.
Well, thank you for having me, Norman.
I'm Norman Gilliland, and I hope you'll join me for the next hour of University of the Air.